Well, good morning, church. Let's try that again. Good morning, church. It's good to see you. It's about time to stop all of the fellowship and love. Now it's all tragic from here on out. I want to tell you a couple of stories before I get started. One of these stories I told recently up at the elders' retreat or seminar, whatever that was, in Little Rock. So if you were there and you're hearing this story, don't panic. New stuff will come. It's not my story. It comes from Tony Campalo. He was speaking at a Presbyterian church, going to do a big seminar there, whenever the ministers there said, "Can we stop and have a prayer for you before you go out?" Well, that's normal. You get that a lot. So eight preachers gathered around. They said, "It's our tradition that you kneel." So he knelt. They all put hands on him. But they were older men, and they liked to pray a long time, but they didn't like to stand a long time. So they started leaning on him during the prayer. And he was struggling, trying to keep focused on the prayer, but it was hard because it kept going and it wasn't about him anymore. They were praying about other things he'd never heard of. One of them was a man named Charlie Stolfus. They said, "Lord, be with Charlie Stolfus. You know him. He lives in that silver trailer down the road a mile, the one on the right-hand side, third from the corner." And Tony's thinking, "I'm pretty sure God doesn't need directions." But he... the man goes on. He's going to leave his wife and three kids. Step in and do something. Well, eventually the prayer's over. He gives his talk. He's driving home on the Pennsylvania Turnpike when he sees a hitchhiker. He stops, picks him up. Evidently hadn't seen any of the movies, so he stops and picks him up. So they're driving on. He says, "My name's Tony Campalo. What's yours?" He goes, "My name's Charlie Stolfus." Tony didn't say anything. At the next exit, he got off, turned around, went back the other way. The man looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm taking you home." He goes, "What do you mean?" He said, "Because you've just left your wife and three kids." Charlie plastered himself against the side of the car about that time, eyes bulging. Tony pulls off at the correct exit. He has directions. So he goes to the exact trailer. Whenever he said, how did you know I lived here? He said, "God told me." So the wife opens the door. She's crying. She's, "What? How?" And Charlie whispers to her a little bit. And the more he whispers, the bigger her eyes get. Tony stepped out of his car, walked up and says, "You two inside, sit down. I'm going to talk to you." And he talked to them about marriage and commitment and scripture and God. And that afternoon, they made a profession of faith in Christ. They pledged to be faithful to him and to each other. I love that story. But there's a problem with that story. I'm not going to tell you the problem yet. This last Sunday, I got to co-preach. I like to co-preach, and we bring people from our church up to help me preach because Lord knows I could use it. And this last week, it was with Stuart McGuigan. Yes, of one of those McGuigans. So he's Northern Irish, and I'm almost nothing but kind of Scottish off here, and we're talking back and forth. And one of the things we brought up was how expressions mean something different to each group. For example, as a young man, 21 years old, he came to America. They were sitting about in someone's house. There's this woman with a wee baby. And he goes, "Oh, that's a lovely baby. Would you mind if I nurse your baby?" Well, I'm proud to say not in Scotland, but in Ireland, to say nurse your baby just means to cuddle it, to hold it. And he kept going. She was going, I don't. And he was going, "No, just nurse it a little. That's all." And she just wasn't getting it. Well, I brought up how we had a famous American preacher come once. And as it was getting hot, he took off his jacket and laid that down. But it's getting hotter. And he said, "Would you mind if I took off my vest?" And all the ladies started going, because vest means a T-shirt. And we couldn't quite understand how he was going to do this. He meant waistcoat to us. But even worse, if you're going to go visit somebody in Britain, not just Scotland, but also in England, and let's say you're going to be there at 2 o'clock, you'll say, "I'll knock you up at 2 o'clock. You don't say that here. In our congregation, we have an English lady. Yes, we have them all but Welsh. If you're Welsh, please come. We need to complete the set. But we have an English lady who said that she has an American husband, and that when they first met, they just talked for a while, and the man said, I would really like to take you out sometime. And she thought about it, and she said, well, you can come along Friday about 7 and knock me up. Well, he had different understanding of that term. Now, with that story and these words, what am I saying? There are some of you here that you live for this kind of stuff. And there are others here that were forced to come. And then there are others that everybody else thinks you live for this. But you're here just trying to make it work. You see, you're one of those that hears the Charlie Stolfus story and says, that's a great story, but that never happens to me. And none of those things, I don't have a prayer story like this. And you're one of those that whenever the song leader or the worship leader launches into a Gaither song like Jesus, 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 there's just something about that name. And you look about and people have got tears coming down their face and you're going, it's not... What's wrong with me? I understand. I do. Every so often a congregation will go into one of those Jesus is my boyfriend songs and I feel dead and lost. I'll explain why in a bit. Let's talk about the Bible. I like the Bible. It's good to know it, right? I'm getting these out of the way. Terry Rush left his equipment. He likes to sit down and be casual. Not me. I want to be prepared to flee. You lot made the mistake of sitting down. Tactical error that. Anyway, I love the Bible. I find it fascinating on two huge fronts. One, for the things that aren't in it. Like the book of worship, to give us all the rules. We don't have that. You may think we have it because we act like we do, but we don't. Or the book of who you can fellowship. Nope, don't have it. All the lines on the road. You're allowed to have a skirt at what length now? That would be nice. We don't have that book. But what we do, we have stories that why would you put those in? And I'm not talking about the obvious ones about, the rape of Tamar or peeing against the wall or drinking urine and that type of stuff. I'm talking about complaints, failures, the stumbles of heroes. I mean, look at the book of Psalms. It was the songbook for the church for a long time. It was Jesus' songbook. 150 Psalms, and 61 of them are entirely laments, complaints. More than third, if your math need me, you're trying to work that out. And then there are five more that are mostly laments, with just a little bit of happiness at the end. Look at the story of Jeremiah. Why do we have the story of Jeremiah? Why do we have a whole book called Lamentations? I don't understand how in the world we have churches that teach this triumphant health and wealth, name it and claim it mentality when our Bible has laments and Jeremiah in it. Maybe what we have presented is a happy, shiny church when the Bible isn't happy, shiny. Isaiah has some hope built into it, but it also has long periods of prophecies about unanswered prayers, unheard cries, no Charlie Stolfus stories. We have Paul, who used to be able to heal people by touching bits of cloth that was sent to them, later telling Timothy to use a little wine for his stomach's sake, which he couldn't do in some counties in Arkansas or in some churches. Or he talks about Epaphroditus' illness. What happened to the healings? What happened to the good news? What happened to the stories of prayers being fulfilled? Speaking of Paul, we find him dying alone in a prison, cold. We know because he was asking for his coat. Cold. And writing to his son in the faith, all those in Asia have turned against me. But why is that in the Bible? Or the book of Hebrews. You might think the faith chapter. And everybody that thinks that is only thinking of the first half. because the second half has people killed in gross and horrible ways, and they're not even named. It's kind of like using Fox's Book of Martyrs as a recruiting tool. I'm not so sure. Why is that in there? And then there are some stories that need a good tweaking if we want to keep our faith at the elementary level. Excuse me. Where every prayer is answered and everything's a part of God's plan and we should be happy, happy, happy all the time. Stories like the ones we're going to talk about. Let's talk about Abraham. Abraham was an absolute hero unless you look close. Then he sold his wife out twice to save his own sorry skin. He was horrible to his children, didn't raise them properly, shoved his wife and kind of son out the door twice in the wilderness. Not exactly a good father. Maybe that's why his son, who is named Isaac, or he laughs, has issues. You see, that's something I want to talk to you about. Distance from God. And for some of you, this is going to fall very cold because God is almost like your puppy. He follows you everywhere you go and you are so excited and you have long, generous conversations. But for most of us in this room, we would love that, but we only see him in the rearview mirror and then sometimes just by a glimpse. And our prayers don't have those miraculous healings that we hear about. I want to talk about Isaac. Isaac was raised by a legend of the faith. His father engaged God in a great and a mighty way. He traveled all over the place. It was an amazing thing. And then you come upon Jacob, the grandson. And he wrestles with God. He's got his own issues. We'll talk about him this afternoon. But then you have Isaac. Isaac always sat on the other end of the pew from God. Isaac keeps God at an arm's length throughout his entire life. To him, God was not as safe. To him, God was not the one he wanted to run to when he was in trouble. And I think it might have something to do with Mount Moriah. Whenever your dad's faith almost gets you killed and you're told, hey, trust me, that might impact your ability to deal with God. We know the story. There's a story. Would you put this story in the Bible? God says to Abraham, travel a little bit of ways here. Go up on this mountain and kill your son. And Abraham goes. Now think about this, because when God told Moses, hey, let's just kill all the Israelites, Moses didn't say, well, let's walk and talk about it for a while. He said, no. Abraham said, let's go. The Jews have really struggled with this story. Many rabbinical sources say it wasn't really God, it was Satan that told Abraham to do this, because they just can't deal with the story. And by the way, just as an aside, most rabbinical sources say that the words used to describe Isaac would place him at 37 years old. Now that changes everything. Because if you've got a 37-year-old still living at home, killing him could be an option. Most Christian scholars, and by the way, that's all that some people will take from today, going, yes? Some Christian scholars, most of them, will say he was at least 18 or 19 at this stage. All those little stories where he's a little boy, that's the words just don't match little boy that are used there. He saw it coming. He knew what was happening. Richard Dawkins and the atheists love this story because it paints God as savage, primitive, this Middle Eastern deity, no better than any of the other gods of the Philistines or the Midianites. It's my opinion, what happened on that mountain made Isaac not sing the same songs, not get as close. And here's the thing which I find amazing. God accepts it. And God never asked much from Isaac. He never does. In fact, twice Isaac offered to leave Canaan and God said no. He didn't even let him go on an adventure. Just stay still. It's all right. I don't think it's easy to be the child of a legend, especially when their mission endangers your childhood or your life. There are several books out there now, which will not be on the tables across here, that are written by sons of ministers and daughters of legends in the church that say, here's why we left. There's a whole preacher kid phenomena. We all know about it, but we may not understand how many never outgrow it, because the calling of their fathers or the speaking of their mother, something about it made them unsafe. Now, I don't want to make this about me, but I don't want to make it about you either. And I don't want to tell your story, so I'm going to tell mine. I am Isaac. Right before this started today, my wife is with me on this trip. It's her first trip to Tulsa. I wanted her to be prepared for the glitter and the glow of the city when we came, but she's here this time. But I turned to her just about 10 minutes before time and said, everything in me says, get in your truck and drive away. And that may surprise many of you. I gave 260 talks last year, 70-some flights. And before every one of them, I wanted to run. And after every one of them, I wanted to hide. I am Isaac. Drawing near to God is not easy for me. Never has been. I'm a son of a legend in some ways. He found God during the Korean War. He got scared, yelled, oh my God, and realized he didn't have one, so he went to look. When he found him all the way. He found the far right of our brotherhood, and he bought every single system they had. And by the way, he's an honorable, good man in every sense of the term. That is not a complaint. But what happened was, well, first of all, some good things. He pulled our family out of generations of poverty. I wouldn't have done it. I've told him many times, if I'd been born first, you'd still been born poor. He has drive. My son does too. It skipped a generation somehow. Really. My spiritual gift is sitting. And I like to sit on the couch unto the Lord as often as possible. When my father became a minister, the first church fired him for being too mean, and he found another one. And he stayed with that group. And children were there to march the kingdom forward. From the time I was 7 years old, I had memorized the Joel Miller film strips, because that was my job. I was to narrate and turn. I did everything but the ding, those of you that remember. There was no time for Little League. There was no time to go to a party. There was no time for Boy Scouts. None of that was part of my childhood. It was kingdom, kingdom, kingdom. No hobbies, kingdom. You couldn't schedule things, kingdom. I learned to preach at an early age. I was not asked if I wanted to. This is what you're going to do. The first fight my father and I ever had was when I was a teenager, and I told him that I wanted to study something else. And he threw luggage in the middle of the room and said, pack it up and leave. Because it was kingdom. Not because he didn't love me, but because he loved God more. As a boy, you might be saying, well, maybe he took it a bit far. I'm not sure that he took it a bit far. What I know is it didn't work well for me. God wasn't safe. He drew so near to the fire of God that unknown to him, the family got burned. When my son went through Paris Island boot camp for the Marine Corps, those of you that don't know about the Marine Corps, when you're in boot camp, you don't get to write home. You have little time. We got a couple of letters, but there's no contact really for about 12 weeks. You get the phone call the week before, and then you're allowed to go down. It was our first time to see him. You're responsible to take food if you want to eat with them when they break out of their formation. So the night before we got there, we bought food. We were so excited. We invited my parents and my in-laws down, everybody excited. Only to arrive the next day and Dad didn't visit with my son because he was too busy kingdom work among the others. And he gave away all of the food. And we looked at each other and go, what? Really? This is our son. He's going to war. But kingdom, kingdom, kingdom.
I'm Isaac.
I believe in God. But whenever C.S. Lewis talks about Christ figure Aslan, when he's asked, is he good? And he says, he's good, but he's not safe. I'm first to raise my hand and say, yes, I understand this. I have seen parents in churches of Christ drive away their children and ensure that their congregation is a one-generation church because they've drawn so near to the fire, they've burned their kids. This is the way it's going to be done, because this is the way it is done. Maybe you find yourself around prayer champions. They love to pray. I'll never forget. The elders thought it would be good for me to have an intern. I didn't. Never thought of that, because you have to talk to them. But they brought one in. He's a good guy, by the way. Still a good friend of mine. And he said, well, since we're going to be working together, could we maybe pray together at the first of every week? And I thought, okay. Somewhere deep inside, I was thinking, that should have been my idea. I should have thought of that. But I said, yeah, sure, why not? So we met the next Monday morning. He said, do you want to pray first or me? And I said, why don't you go ahead? He started. Uh-oh. About 10 minutes in, I realized I'm in trouble. I've got nothing. He's prayed for everything I'd thought about, and a whole lot of people I hadn't thought about. And he's asking God to do things I'd never thought to bring up to God. What am I going to say when he's done? Ditto, Lord. He's supposed to be my intern. Every now and then I'm around prayer warriors. It amazes me. I was asked to speak at a prayer seminar at Calhoun, Louisiana last year. And I kept telling Thomas, who's an incredible man, I said, you're a man of prayer. You really don't need me there. I talk to God, but at a distance, a sentence or two at a time. I'm not good at this. And he said, no, we need to hear your voice. I'm thinking, what am I? I'm going to stand up and say, hey, you know how you like that prayer thing? Good. Bye. What am I going to say? I think of Isaac. He got Rebekah. God blessed Isaac even though he was distant. I've been blessed so much, I don't know what more God could do for me. I just don't. And yet I'm Isaac. And I look at Isaac's story, and he got Rebekah. Oh my goodness, my wife, like I said, is with me. She's my angel that saved me. And as I look at it, I'm going, wow. And then I read Isaac. They wanted children. They weren't able to have children for many years. And the Bible says, and then Isaac prayed. And I smile and shake my head. I get it. I get it. Sometimes the last thing I think about is praying. I'm not proud of this, by the way. None of this. I would really love it if all of you went leaving out of here saying, you know, Terry Rush has baptized his thousands, but Patrick has tens of thousands or something, and thought of me as a spiritual giant, but I'm not. I'm Isaac. And every day it amazes me that God still hears me when I get around to talking to him. Isaac decided to pray, and God didn't give them a son. He gave them two. He was not afraid to bless him. It's a huge blessing. God letting Isaac know, I still love you. I do. And I'm going to bless you when you talk to me. I find it fascinating. When I was a boy, we had to do everything exactly right or God wouldn't hear you. Do you remember that? And if you didn't do it exactly right, God wouldn't hear the prayer. It's like God was a skittish dog that you were trying to woo to come close to you. And as an adult, I realize I'm the skittish dog. God's been trying to woo me all my life. And he's still wooing, which amazes me. I'm not sure I would have put any of this story in the Bible. I'm not. I'm not sure that I would have put it there. I understand how this works. My father recently disowned me because I talk of grace and mercy. That's not acceptable anymore. That hurt. But then I look about and see my wife, and I see my beautiful children living in freedom in Christ. excited about Jesus. Can't wait to go to church. I didn't want to go to church. I had to go. And then even when I went to college, I had to go because I knew if I didn't, they would feel a disturbance in the force. But I want to talk to you, if you're Isaac, and give you hope. If drawing close to God burned you and you retreated, you gave him everything, and it wasn't a Charlie Stolfa story, it didn't work, I want to talk to you. I've given God everything sometimes in my life, or at least I think I did. Put it all on the line for a mission, a cause that went down in flames. Nothing came good of it. And I limped home bruised, poor, not knowing what to do next. And it didn't dawn on me for years that God was as upset as I was at the way that turned out. And that he wasn't mad at me. And that he would still let me work for him. I don't get that, by the way. But I'm thankful. I don't understand why my wife has not put a pillow over my face in the middle of the night. We've been married for 33 years. If she had killed me, she would have been free for a decade by now. But I'm grateful. I want to talk to you if your parents' faith became a burden, or if they are criticizing you for being here. I want to talk to you. You may be Isaac. You may be struggling to make your faith work. This may be where you have come for your last chance at drawing near to God. I get that. But I want to tell you something. As long as you can fog a mirror, there's no reason to talk of last chances with God. His patience is amazing. I'm just in a store. And if I was God, I would kill 4 or 5 people. Some of you don't understand that. Those of you who do, brothers. Somebody bumps my cart, cuts in front of me in the 8 aisle or less, or if you're in Walmart, 20 items or less. What value is that? Anyway, and they have enough stuff to go down the Amazon. If I was God, they wouldn't be there. They would be cursed. And yet God has looked at what's been going on this planet for 2,000 years, and he hasn't ended it yet. If he can put up with the planet, he can put up with you. And it's not a put up with. He actually loves you. And when you talk to him, he'll give you blessings. Maybe not Tony Campolo, Charlie Stolfa's blessings, but he'll give you blessings. If you came here under the influence of somebody else whose faith just doesn't, it's just too much for you, I want you to know that you're here because I wanted to tell you are Isaac and you are blessed and you are loved by God. I don't know if that's rain, snow, hail, or if God decided, you know, that's about it. But if you're one of those that looks around and you, when somebody cries during a prayer or cries during communion or during a song, which, by the way, my father always went, you can't bring emotion into religion. And I was thinking, well, is fear an emotion? But that was inside. I said that inside. I still to this day look around and say, that should be me. I should be choking up about now. I really do care that Jesus died. And I really do care that I was part of it. I went to see the Passion of the Christ years ago. Once. That's all. Other people bought the DVD. I'm going, seriously? You want to see that again? Some people brought in snacks, a tub of popcorn. I'm going, what? Others thought it was the most transcendent experience of their life. Well, good for you. You may be Abraham. Those of us that are Isaac need a sermon every now and then too. Those of us that have been burned need to know we're still loved. I love, you can find her, the story on YouTube if you look about a young Marine, and Marines are dear to us, who lost both arms and both legs, came home to his gorgeous model style girlfriend. Have you seen her? Not only did she marry him, she carries him up the stairs. She carries him out on the beach. And she doesn't just carry him, she laughs and you see joy on her face. And I realize that's the gospel right there. And those of us that have been burned and wounded and lost some things, God is still laughing when we give him the chance to carry us too. There are those out here who have been so amazing to me, where you've come up to me and you've said, "I love your stuff. I've been listening online. Do you know, to this day, I don't listen to sermons." I've never heard me, but I don't listen to others either, because I drew so near. I don't get a lot of joy out of that. My wife listens to all kinds of contemporary Christian music, some of it even with instruments, because she's quite the infidel. I don't listen to contemporary Christian music. People will say, "Oh, do you know Chris Tomlin's coming?" And I'll go, that's really good. God tested me 2 weeks ago. Family in our church called me. They said, We're going to see Michael Card in concert. We have 2 extra tickets. Would you like to go?" My first thought was, Cammy does not know of this conversation. I can say no, and she will never know. If I say yes, I have to get off of the couch that is my place before the Lord, and go listen to contemporary Christian. And I said yes, and we went, and I'm told I enjoyed it. You know what I enjoyed was watching a man whose faith was so powerful and whose gift was so beautiful. And I enjoyed watching the crowd be moved. I needed to see that, to realize that on those times where my spirit feels dead, it's not God who moved. It is just that I am Isaac, and he knows that, and he'll use me too. We always focus, when we get to Isaac, we always rush ahead to the fraud and Jacob and the like, don't we? I wanted just to talk about Isaac, because you know something? He still believed. He still brought faith to it. All he had left when he was an old man was a blessing, but he gave all he had to the boys. And I find it interesting that when the boys met later, they were expecting there to be all kinds of conflict and anger, but instead there was hugs and reconciliation. And I can't help but think Isaac had something to do with that. His prayers had something to do with that. My wife and I drove here from Colorado yesterday. I know you're thinking, why? Because we don't have the money to fly and buy our own tickets. And there are some events like this one where you don't get all your expenses. So that's all right. That's fine, by the way. I have all the money I need to live the rest of my life, as long as that's Wednesday. So we drove. And we drove across Kansas. There you go. Yes, I'm already hearing it. Now, those of you from Kansas are a bit insulted now, but let me explain. Other places have bumps. They have foliage. They have wildlife, and tumbleweeds are not wildlife. As we drove, we didn't talk a lot. I don't talk unless I'm working, as a rule. But when we talked about how in awe we are of our children. My son's out of the Marine Corps now. He is safe and whole. He still lives in a battle zone, Detroit, where we lived for 10 years. He's married to a Christian woman, and he is my hero. He's amazing. Our daughter, are you kidding me? She's born in Scotland. She used to sound right, but she's been in Nashville a long time now. We sent a Highland Lassie down. She's a Dixie Chick now. And she's all in. She's married to Josh Graves, who's one of my heroes, young minister, author. They have two children, our grandsons, who are perfect in every way. And their church is in freedom. It marches forward into unknown areas with joy. And we look at each other and we ask, how did that happen? I was Isaac when I raised them. I didn't know how to raise them. How did this happen? And the only response is, God loves Isaac too. And God will bless you. And that's why it amazes me when I read the Bible and I see Psalm 139, where it talks about before a word is on your tongue, he knows it expressly. What in the world does that mean? I'll tell you what it means. My father taught me Hebrew the same time I was learning English. I'm serious. This was seminary. So as a 3 and 4 year old, I knew what the Hebrew was there. It means before a word's on your tongue, not only does he know you're going to say it, he knows why. He understands the why. My father's not an ogre. He's a good man. What he has done because he loves the Lord. And God will let him go to heaven. He'll let me go and you'll go too. And some of us won't like it for a week or two. When we realize who else made it. But we're going. I've got to tell you this, off subject, but a lady stopped at the door once, looked at me and she goes, I need to tell you something. I said, all right, seriously, do you have to? And she said, I don't like your preaching and I don't think much of you. So I hugged her. Now, she wasn't prepared for that. It's like hugging a stump. And I'm not a natural hugger because I'm British, but I went for it. And I whispered in her ear, I said, if you don't like me, you'd better learn to. Because when we get to heaven, I'm moving in next to you. But Psalm 139, my father, when we were kids, we'd say something funny. He'd say, you little rats. And that was a good thing. I remember I was dating a girl once and she said something funny. And I said, you little rat. And she nearly killed me. It didn't mean the same to her. For some reason, being called a furry sewer-dwelling rodent was not a positive. To this day, she's probably telling stories about that horrible fella. I don't get her, she doesn't get me, but God gets both of us. He knows why we said the word. He knows what it means. Are you Isaac? Trust God. Wasn't his idea to burn you. He understands. He's never tired of waiting for you. And I'm not going to tell you to run to him in joy, and I'm not going to do all of that. What I'm going to say is wherever you are, you don't have to run to God. Because he's already there. He's not disappointed in you. He is good and he is not safe, but he's not one dimensional. He will work with you. He will woo you the rest of your life. Scoot a little closer from time to time. See what your faith can do. Just a wee bit of faith, that's all. He doesn't need you to be a hero or a giant. He can use the jawbone of an ass to do his will. And you are seeing that occur right now. He can use a small pot of oil to transform a widow's life and that of the village. He can put a stick in the hands of an 80-year-old shepherd and free the slaves. People, every single one of those people was unqualified. Every single one of them. God tended not to use people that went to seminary, except he did use Paul just to show us he can even use them, even though they can't use a sentence or form one less than 180 words. Some of which still make us shake our heads wondering, what? Hey, if Peter couldn't figure him out, Paul probably is hard to figure out. I wonder if every now and then God was up there going, you know, a comma would be good. Semicolon, not asking a lot. A lady once told me years ago, when I told her that I just needed to sit down and be quiet and never speak for the church. This is about 30 years ago. I said, I'll never lead a prayer. I'll go because I know he's there. But I cannot serve him. She told me, evidently a fan of the King James, had not learned the other word. She said, if God can find a use for Balaam's ass, he can find one for you. I wasn't sure whether to be impressed by her insight or insulted by the one she used. By the way, I still prefer calling it Balaam's ass because ever since the Shrek movies, a Scotsman saying donkey does not go over well. Those of you that are spiritual giants that think this is all a pile of whining, I want you to understand something. That means you're not a spiritual giant. You're shallow. God has always called the broken. God has always called those that were weak. So that way we couldn't say, oh, he was fantastic or she was great. What we have to do is say, what kind of God we must have. If he could take that little bit of dirt and do that with it. If you are Isaac, you are welcome. God bless.